Chapter 66. "Why am I reporting to you rather than Commander Ironfist?" Kip asked Karis. He stood in the prison's quarters in the Blackguard's informal posture, back straight, legs shoulder-width apart, hands lightly clasped behind his back. Dressed in his inductee's greys, which were loose and shapeless, standard-issue baggy rather than the tailored, form-fitting, Luxin-infused clothing full Blackguards earned upon taking final vows, he looked martial. Karis noted the change. Kip's eyes were no longer simply the striking blue he'd been born with. Green ringed each pupil. Many tiny flecks of blue served to subtly brighten his irises. Red bloomed like stars or fires, and a close inspection revealed hints of every other colour there too. She would have reprimanded him for burning through his life so quickly if it weren't so hypocritical. He was still stout, maybe always would be, but the baby fat was almost gone from his face, and when he stood here with determination and mild pique at doing something that didn't make sense to him, he hearkened back unmistakably to a young Gavin Guile. Moreover, his question was a good one, and it deserved better than the lie Karis had prepared. "Commander Ironfist is a bit busy these days. I'll debrief you and pass on the relevant details to the Commander and the White. Though I no longer serve in an official capacity, it is war, and we all serve where we're needed." Kip looked stung. "Not even this is important enough for a direct report? The betrayal of two Blackguards and their deaths? We're in a civil war. Betrayal is commonplace. Do you know how many Blackguards we've lost in the sweeps this month?"
"Six,"
Kip said. She stopped. "That's right." Kip seemed oblivious at times, as caught up in his own world as 16-year-olds get. But maybe he was more aware than she'd credited. "Tell me everything," she said. And he did. It wasn't as good of a report as she'd expected from a full Blackguard, but for one unpracticed and ignorant of the expectations for such a report, it was excellent. "Again," she said. He told it again, this time clearer, with fewer, "Oh, I forgot to say's." But then he stopped and rubbed his forehead.
"I wasn't going to... It doesn't help anyone, but
I expect your reports to be fully honest, Breaker," she said.
"I didn't understand it at the time. And then things happened so fast. It kind of got buried, but right before the first arrow took out Lytos, I heard him say, 'Fuck it, I can't do this.'"
A chill invaded Karis's bones.
"And you took that to mean what?"
"I didn't take it to mean anything. All hell broke loose right then, but looking back, I think he had second thoughts right at the end. I think he was drawing his knife to attack Buskin. Not me."
Lytos. Or Hollum have mercy. Karis had been holding off her own memories of the big eunuch. He'd been a practical joker with an infectious laugh, constantly short-sheeting the newly sworn Blackguards, putting firebalm in their underclothes, dropping live scorpions in young Blackguards' boots, though he sealed the scorpions' stingers in solid Luxin first. He wasn't malicious, just a prankster. That Lytos might come through and do the right thing at the last second broke her heart for some reason, even more than the abstract thought that he might have been deceived or blackmailed into betraying them. And then to be killed, before he could prove his fidelity. Oh, Lytos. No wonder Kip hadn't told his friends. "By the way, one of the men you killed, he was on our side."
"As he lay there, he said something about a Luxiat,"
Kip said.
"But it wasn't clear. He died before he could tell me."
His voice was level as he said it, but something in his tone reminded her suddenly that as much as this boy looked like a soldier, stood like a soldier, reported like a soldier, he was also still a boy.
"I'm sorry, Kip," she said. "Am I right not to tell them, I mean?"
Kip asked brusquely. He didn't want her softness and understanding now.
"The commander says we're not afraid of the truth, that that's what makes Blackguards different. Am I serving my team by holding this back, or betraying them by not trusting them to handle it?"
"Who took the shot that killed Lytos?" she asked. She knew from his report.
"Winston," Kip said, puzzled.
"Then what do you think?" she asked. His brow furrowed.
"Winston's different. It doesn't seem to bother him, killing, I mean."
"There are some few like that," she said. "I think if you told Winston that he would say Lytos shouldn't have been there in the first place. That Lytos put himself in the line of fire, that he gave your team no choice.
I think Lytos would agree, don't you?
It's just that simple for some people?
Kip asked. Some people are what they appear.
Not enough, he said. He looked angry. At her. Just the misplaced emotions of youth, or something more particular. Then Kip said, When did you know you loved my father? It was someone tearing the bandages off a wound.
Pardon? She asked.
He didn't repeat the question.
That is a very personal question, she said.
Not really, he said. Part of her wanted to slap him for countering her so insolently, but in the next moment she knew that it was really that she wanted to slap Dazen for keeping so many secrets. Now to keep the secrets of that man who might well be dead, she was going to have to lie, too.
There was a dance, the Lux Lord's Ball. I danced with both him and his brother. I think I fell in love with him then.
So you always loved Gavin? Kip asked. She saw the trap just in time.
This conversation is finished, she sputtered.
But you tried to elope with Dazen. Why would you do that if you loved Gavin all along?
Dazen was the younger brother. There was no advantage in marrying him. There was no reason to elope with him except for love. I was young.
I'm young. I don't destroy the world over it.
You have no idea what you're talking about, Caris said,
because I only get lies and evasions every time I ask. It took the wind from her sails, though anything but becalmed. He was right. He deserved the truth, and he couldn't be told the truth. He thought his father was his uncle, and his uncle his father, and he hated the one and loved the other, in the wrong order.
Kip, she said quietly. How many times have you told the story of what happened to you at the Battle of Rue?
I don't know.
Yes, you do.
He said nothing for a moment, then gave in. Once or twice when I was with the squad. We'd been drinking. Even in my squad, some of them were so excited to hear about it. It seems obscene somehow.
I was there with you, Kip, and you did nothing wrong. In fact, you were the hero that day.
The word dropped between them like an ill-fitting garment. Kip couldn't pick it up.
We all acted bravely, Kip. We all did what we had to, but your actions made all the difference. And you're reluctant to recount them, because anyone who wasn't there can't really understand the terror of that island coming alive and trying to devour us, of those men and women remade into giants, and of that feeling of seeing the Prism himself helpless. Our Prism, who can do everything, for whom all things are easy as breathing. And there he was, helpless. You acted like a hero would act, and you got lucky and it mattered. But you know, as warriors know, how easily you could have been unlucky, how others just as brave, and braver still, did more and greater things. But because they failed or were simply unseen, will never be known.
Kip swallowed, said nothing. Bayer Niel must have talked. I heard about it in a song.
In a song? They took some old drinking song and put my name in it. I almost threw up. It wasn't Bayer Niel,
Caris said.
What? It was me. I talked to some of the most popular minstrels in the Jaspers.
Kip's face twisted like she'd betrayed him.
But you understand. How could you?
Because it's true, Kip. It's not all the truth. And what's true about it may be misunderstood, but that others will misunderstand doesn't mean we keep the truth in a basket, and because the day may come when you need a name.
I don't want another name, he said, glum teenager again. I've already got too many. Not a name like Kip. A name like Breaker. As in, I am become a name.
If he didn't know the Geverson, he should.
I don't want that either, he said. I wasn't done. You can barely tell a story about a battle in which everyone came out looking good. You didn't fail. You didn't fire a musket as a friend moved into the line of fire and got his face blown off. You weren't a coward that day. We fought odds beyond human comprehension, and if it wasn't a victory for us, at least it wasn't a victory for our foes.
Her lips were suddenly dry, for here she must tell him truths and lies linked. And he would never forgive her for it.
There were no battles that simple in the False Prisms War. None. How can you tell stories of what you did when it seems everything you did was wrong? when you were a coward and your friends died because of it? Or is it less painful to tell of when you almost died because your own kin failed you, running away when they could have saved you easily? A man who's a hero one day can be a coward the next, and sometimes even telling of our heroism reminds us of our cowardice. My brother and sister blackguards fought and killed cousins they'd met 100 times, classmates with whom we'd played pranks on our magisters, lovers with whom we'd shared a first kiss. Samite had an unrequited love for this ridiculously handsome cavalier. His family joined the other side. Samite was part of a strike force that infiltrated a city, found the cavalier and his fellows and their families camped in one of the great stables of the city. They barred the doors and set it afire. She listened to him burn to death, screaming to her to have mercy, not for himself, but for his family who were inside with him. Samite loved horses. Riding was her one refuge from her cares. She won't ride now, unless she must. She doesn't feel worthy after burning 270 of the innocent creatures to death, and all those people. She was 16 years old.
Kip was aghast.
I didn't know, because it's not the kind of thing a warrior shares often, not even in her cups.
And you and my father, you have stories like that? She hesitated. How close to the truth did she dare go? How long would he accept evasions? Worse? He asked.
You can't rate soul wounds, she said.
One thing, Kip said, I have to ask. My mother left me a note asking that I take vengeance on my father. She was a... He swallowed, but continued manfully. She was an addict and a liar, and Orholam only knows what else. I assume she was a camp follower who was spurned afterward, but she said, with her dying breath, she said Gavin was a rapist. It's not true, is it?
Rapist.
For some reason, Caris didn't flash back to that awful bedroom and lying on her back, quietly, passively drunk, wishing she would pass out, wishing she would fight. Instead, she thought back to the long walk home, the shame at her torn-off buttons that kept her from covering herself decently, the averted stares of the guards she walked past. No one had even offered her a coat. Who wouldn't offer a young girl who was half-naked and ashamed a coat?
Your father, Caris said levelly, locking eyes with Kip, is not a rapist.
The man Kip knew as his father, the man who had claimed him as son, Dazen, was not a rapist.
But it was war.
Are you sure? Kip asked. Her initial hesitation had been too long. He needed more. It was not the kind of question to which you could leave doubts. Caris said,
once in bed, he mistook my cries for cries of pain. It distressed him so much he went soft. Not the reaction a rapist would have, you think?
For a moment, Kip didn't seem to understand. Then he blushed furiously.
I think that was more than I wanted to know.
Caris cleared her throat. It was more than she'd wanted to share. She felt the blood rising in her own cheeks, but it was necessary.
Good enough?
Kip averted his eyes.
About that? Dear Orholam, yes. Please, let's never speak of it again.
Caris laughed.
Uh-oh, now I know your weakness.
Oh, come on, you can't, Kip complained. No one wants to hear about their parents having... their parent. Never mind.
Parents. Like she and Dazen were Kip's parents. Dazen, as Gavin, had adopted Kip and he'd married Caris, so that sort of made Caris Kip's mother, right?
Parents. One little slip. One little plural. Parent. Mother.
It touched something in Caris so cold that the word itself froze on the point of impact. It dropped and broke like a young girl's princess hopes had on a cold midnight wandering home alone in the cold, eyes wet, thighs wet. And what might have given Kip that preposterous idea? Perhaps that Caris had been spending time with him every day for months, training him, giving him advice, supervising his education. She'd been manipulated into acting like a mother, into showing care that could be mistaken for love. That bitch. The White had done this on purpose. What had it been? Her spies must have told her how, after Gavin's disappearance, Caris had wept when her moon blood came,
how she'd obviously hoped that their single night together had impregnated her, like in the stories. But then, one night had been enough for Caris before, hadn't it? Back when she'd been a girl and hadn't been ready for a child. The mere thought of it sent black clouds churning in her heart. No, don't think of it. Of course the White had thought that Caris wanted a child. Caris was facing the end of her childbearing years and the loss of her purpose as a blackguard and the loss of Gavin. Surely Caris would desire to have something of his, of theirs, something to show that all her sacrifices hadn't been for naught. The White was trying to make Kip a son for Caris, simply because she thought Caris had never had her own. She didn't know. Caris's secret was safe. And how could Caris fault the White for trying to manage Caris's emotions? Caris was doing the same thing to Kip, lying so he wouldn't do something disastrous, because if he knew too much, he would act, thinking he knew more than he did. She moistened her lips. Kip was already studying her as one might study a large dog, wondering if it was going to lunge for your throat or if it wanted to cuddle. But then that old fear poked its head out of the dark cellar where Caris kept it. Surely the White, so careful in all things, would have investigated Caris fully before handing over her spies. And how good had Caris been at covering her tracks? She'd only been 16 and 17 years old. That cold place went hot. All the shame of that concealed failure ignited. Who abandons a child? Who leaves a helpless babe in a far country with people she doesn't even know? Had they been good to him? Was he well? She'd lain there, holding Dazen after their marriage, and she'd challenged him to be a good father. She'd been so cool, so correct, all while sitting on her own secret failure like it wasn't a burning coal. Hypocrite. And the White knew her shame, was holding on to it, maybe only to use it if she absolutely had to. Caris would never be free. She felt hot and cold, nauseated. "Sorry, mother," Kip said. He was trying to make a joke of it, but the word was so sharp-edged that Caris couldn't even hear the joke. None of Kip's tone could make it past the roaring of the blood in her ears, just that one lancet word piercing a boil. "You are not my son," Caris spat. Her heart was bile, and she was vomiting it out on him, foul and acid, and it tore her throat and ate everything it touched. Kip had the same look on his face she'd seen on men mortally wounded, staring at their own guts in ropes in their hands, shocked they weren't already dead, but dying nonetheless. He turned unsteadily and walked out. He closed the door quietly.